a unique woman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, in a Cincinnati hotel. In Labyrinth, starring David Bowie, a selfish 16-year-old girl is given 13 hours to solve a labyrinth and rescue her baby brother when her wish for him to be taken away was granted by the Goblin King. Trumbo follows the life of a real screenwriter, Dalton Trumbo, when he and other artists were jailed and blacklisted for their potential for their political beliefs in 1947. For up-to-date information, all dates, times, and movie summaries are available at www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. Today's Disability Beat is sponsored by our community partner, Jets Pizza. Jets uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jets Pizza stores are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign. Their number 217-352-3333 and 1907 West Springfield Avenue. Their number 217-352-9992, or you can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Seidman from CSH, the Source for Housing Solutions. You're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Amber Smock of Access Living and parent Gaylene Roberts discussing the impact of Department of Labor overtime rules in Illinois for people with disabilities. But first, the news for the week of February 8, 2016 from Disability Scoop. A growing number of students with disabilities are spending most of the day in regular education classrooms alongside their typically developing peers, according to new federal statistics. As of 2013, more than 6 in 10 school-age students served under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act spent at least 80% of their day in regular classrooms. By contrast, roughly half of students with disabilities met that threshold in 2004. The figures come from a report to Congress issued late last year by the U.S. Department of Education outlining the progress of the nation's special education students. In sum, the annual report indicated that more than 5.8 million students aged 6 to 21 were served under IDEA in 2013. Meanwhile, 745,000 children aged 3 to 5 and 339 infants and toddlers received services through the program. While the overall number of school-aged children with disabilities declined between 2004 and 2013, the percentage of those identified as having autism soared by as much as 258% across age groups over the 10-year period, the report found. Some 95% of special education students spent at least some of their day in general education classrooms in 2013, according to the federal data. However, students identified as having intellectual disabilities or multiple disabilities were least likely to spend the majority of their time in inclusive environments. The World Health Organization declared last week that explosive growth of the mosquito-borne Zika virus, which has been spreading rapidly in the Americas and may be linked to birth defects, constitutes an international public health emergency, signaling a new phase in the global effort to battle the virus. The United Nations Health Agency made the decision after convening a panel of experts in Geneva amid reports from Brazil linking the virus to microcephaly, a birth defect in which babies are born with abnormally small heads and brains. The recent cluster of microcephaly cases and other neurological disorders reported in Brazil followed a similar cluster in French Polynesia in 2014. WHO Director General Margaret Chan said in a statement, "The illness from the Zika virus is not considered serious, and symptoms including rashes, joint pain, and reddened eyes are usually mild and last for several days or a week," experts say. The WHO has said that it is aware of no deaths attributed to the virus. Still, the reports from Brazil of links to birth defects have triggered alarm. There is no vaccine for the virus, and last week the WHO declared a threat of alarming proportions, warning that the Zika virus was spreading explosively across the Americas and could infect as many as 4 million people. Last week's declaration will serve as a kind of global notice of the threat, but the WHO did not move to restrict travel or trade in regions where the virus is found. It will probably trigger additional resources being put toward researching the virus and preventing its spread. At least 31 cases of Zika have been detected in 11 U.S. states and the District of Columbia since last year, according to Dr. Ann Schuchat, Principal Deputy Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. All of those people contracted the virus while traveling abroad. So far, there is no evidence of Zika being contracted in the United States. And finally, Steve and Susan Gordo have known the struggles of raising a child with autism, the progress and setbacks, and the haggling with local schools over education plans. Now their 18-year-old son Paul is awaiting trial on a felony assault charge stemming from an incident at a library near Monterey, California last July that the parents say criminalized his disorder. According to Steve Gordo, quote, "You can't prosecute someone for behavior that is a direct result of their disability," end quote. Autism groups and other supporters have urged the Monterey District Attorney to drop the criminal prosecution of Paul, who's among the wave of young people with autism who are entering adulthood. Said Jill Escher, president of the Autism Society of the San Francisco Bay Area, quote, "There's a gigantic bubble of young adults who are coming into a system that's utterly unprepared to meet their needs. We can't, as a just society, let incarceration take its place," end quote. July 14th, Gordo and his son were at a busy library for language study with a home teacher from the Monterey School District. Gordo said he was apprehensive because it is the type of setting known to trigger Paul. People with autism have difficulty with social interaction, repetitive behaviors, and communication, but some are also prone to outbursts, meltdowns, and aggressive behavior due to sensory dysfunction. Gordo said a loud noise or admonishment can cause his son to lose control. After a break, Paul was loud and disruptive, prompting the teacher to tell him to quiet down. Paul, a large 18-year-old, yelled at the teacher and then ran toward the front door of the library, bumping a person at the counter and pushing another man. After running outside of the building, Paul pushed a woman who fell and suffered a concussion. Police responded and questioned witnesses. The Gordo family waited for 2 months before Paul was charged with felony assault with an enhancement for causing great bodily harm. He said his son panicked in the library and was running to take refuge in their car. Because of his inability to make decisions and care for himself, a court appointed the parents as conservators for Paul last April. Steve Gordo said, quote, "When Paul has a meltdown, it's fight or flight. He's not thinking clearly. There is documentation in his school file that says this behavior is related to his disability," end quote. More than 10,000 people have signed an online petition in support of the defendant. And that's the news for this week.
It's the second time I caught you talking to him. up one more time. I think it's a sin. I think I let you down.
Let you down. Gonna let you down and you come.
And I told you before, oh, you can't do that. And everybody's grieving, 'cause I'm the one that won your love. But if it's you're talking that way, they laugh in my face. So please listen to me if you wanna stay mine. I can't have my feelings, I go out of my mind. I'm gonna let you down.
Let me down.
Because I told you before, no, no, you can't do that.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined by two guests on the phone today. Amber Smock, who is of Access Living in Chicago, one of the premier advocacy agencies in the state of Illinois, and a parent, Gaylene Roberts, who are both here to discuss the impact of Department of Labor overtime rules in Illinois for people with disabilities. Gary Arnold is the person from Access Living who contacted me originally with this, and he may be on as well. But I'd like to start out, ladies, by having both Amber and Gaylene kind of introduce yourselves and let the listeners know who you are and a little bit about the issue that you're bringing to the airwaves today.
Well, this is Amber Smock.
Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Yes. This is Amber Smock from Access Living, and I'm the director of advocacy here, which means that I oversee community organizing and policy work that we do. And while we primarily serve people with disabilities in the Chicago area, on some issues like the overtime issue, our advocacy is statewide. And I've been concerned about the state budget as it affects Access Living and independent living work across the state. And I myself am a person with a disability. I have a severe hearing loss. While I talk, I'm deaf and I sign. So actually, I'm using a sign language interpreter to help me make this do this interview today. So I'm very glad to be on the call.
Great. We're glad to have you. And Gaylene, why don't you go and introduce yourself as well?
Hi, I'm Gaylene Roberts. I'm a mother of a 34-year-old quadriplegic cerebral palsy with developmentally delayed daughter who I am a single parent caregiver for. Many concerns with the effects of this overtime rule and how it will affect my daughter and the entire household. I'm not sure if you want me to go into my concerns or just...
Sure. Why don't you start and then we'll have Amber fill in the blanks.
Okay. Like I said, my daughter's 34 years old. She's a quadriplegic. I'm single parent caregiver. We also have two other children living in the house, a minor child and a 20-year-old, all females. My daughter has a waterbed. She's always had a waterbed. This is something that was preached to me early in her life for her well-being. She's a manual lift and transfer from her chair to her bed. Hiring people, even for respite in the past, was challenging, because they would always have to send two people because they considered her a two-man lift. But we can't use a Hoyer and keep the waterbed. That's her choice, to stay in the waterbed. So 3 years of taking care of her, I have learned to maneuver and to stand and pivot her. That's not something that's easy for the average person to do.
Mm-hmm.
A man can do it, but then we're getting into the issues of a male taking care of her personal needs. The average woman cannot lift her. She weighs 115 pounds. She does very little weight bearing. So there's my first issue and concern with her. Then the other issue is with the privacy issues with the other two girls in the house. Next issue, we live out in the country in a rural area. If you don't have four-wheel drive when the weather's not nice, whether it's muddy or snowy, you're not going to get to us. So that's going to create a problem for people getting to us. her care, according to her service plan, her main care is in the morning because of her bathing and her dressing, food, and in the evening. So immediately, this causes a split shift to hire outside the home. And I've already mentioned the getting here and having to drive to us. That's always been an issue with hiring people, even, again, just for respite, to get them out here.
So if I could interrupt for a second, Gaylene, so where does your daughter's services, where do they come from? Is that through Division of Rehab Services, the Home Services Program?
Yes, it comes through the DOORS office, through the Division of Rehab, through the state of Illinois.
And so as of March 1st, there's a new policy that's going to be put in place that does what? Maybe we can have Amber explain that.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, sure. So this is Amber, and the issue is that at the federal level, the United States Department of Labor has a new rule that mandates that home services workers, domestic workers across the United States are now eligible to be paid overtime. And while we can see that as a victory for domestic workers who have long been underrecognized for the value of the work that they do, the issue is that every state must prepare a plan in order to make sure that overtime to workers has been paid. However, as you know, the state of Illinois is in a gigantic fiscal crisis, and therefore our state chose to implement the rule in the following way. They decided to cap the number of hours that workers could work at 40, and they also provided extra rules and stringencies to people with disabilities in the home services program. So, for example, and if you have a certain number of hours per week, according to the number of hours you have to hire a certain number of personal assistants or providers. You must also have an emergency backup provider on file. And the problem is that there are a lot of people who work as independent providers or personal assistants in the home services program, like Aileen, who work more than 40 hours a week. And now they're being told that they can't work more than 40, and they have to make sure to bring the person with the disability must be served by more than one PA. And so the deal is that for people with disabilities who have 1 to 40 hours a week, you can have one PA. However, if you have 36 to 70 hours, you need to have two PAs. If you have 71 to 105 hours of service a week, you need three PAs, and it goes up from there. And the question is that there are many people with very severe disabilities who are served by people who work overtime for them, who know what their needs are and have worked with them for a long time. And it can be very difficult to bring in a new person, an expert person, or a backup person who doesn't exactly know what they're doing. That could put people at risk. And the question that we're seeing is, will people who are being affected by this, people with disabilities, will they be forced to leave their homes and go into nursing homes? That's a risk for community living in Illinois. So groups like Access Living are tracking this, and we're very concerned when we hear about stories like Gaylene.
So does this mean, are they doing this to save money for the state of Illinois? Is that the whole intent behind it?
Yes. I think that the issue is that they are not, the state is not saying that they are doing this because it is good for people. They are saying they are doing this because they have to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, how much money will they really save? The home services program in Illinois costs about $585 million a year. The state has estimated that to implement overtime with no cap, implement overtime with the cap they have now, would cost an extra $14 or $15 million, which compared to the overall amount, is kind of a drop in the bucket. If they raise the cap to more than 40 hours a week, it would cost more. And given that the state has a gigantic fiscal issue with a big backlog of bills, everybody's trying to search for an answer. You know, the state is saying, okay, well, we have to conserve costs in the home services program. We'll have to make other kinds of cuts to the program. But I have to say, as a disability advocate, that when there are financial problems at the state level, the home services program always comes under attack. And it always affects people with disabilities who really need services just to do their everyday living things. Get up out of bed, shower, eat, dress, go to work. I mean, these are essential things for people to do. And to say that it's basically because the state budget is bad is not fair.
That's very true. So, I mean, does anybody at the state listen to you guys? Because I'm sure you've talked to them about how much more expensive it is for a person to live in a nursing home or an institutional care. Have they had a response to this concern at all?
Yes. Yes. So when the state first told people that this was going to be the new policy, there were letters that went out to personal attendants and to people with disabilities during the week of Thanksgiving. And those letters said, here's the new policy, and we expect you to be in compliance on January 1st. Well, if you're somebody that's familiar with hiring personal attendants, you'll know that it actually takes quite a while to find extra people and to hire them and to train them. And so absolute compliance by January 1st was going to be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we did was we worked with other disability groups, and we sent a letter to the Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, bringing their attention to this issue and saying that, first and foremost, the deadline for January 1st compliance is absolutely unreasonable. And thanks to pressure from advocates and also state legislators and people at different levels, the deadline for compliance was moved from January 1st to March 1st. However, we're still raising a lot of noise because the actual policy itself is very strict. And the people who will be allowed to approve overtime, the people with disabilities who will be allowed to provide overtime, is actually very small. I have some numbers if you'd like to hear them.
Sure.
Okay. So right now, between July and December of 2015, the Department of Human Services Division of Rehab Services said that there are 27,595 people with disabilities in the Home Services Program. So of those 27,595 people, 4,524 will need to hire additional personal attendants in order to come into compliance with the new rule.
Wow.
And not only that, but there are about 33,000 active personal attendants in the program. Of those, 6,000 will need to cut back on their hours for people with disabilities, and the people with disabilities will have to replace them. So this is not a small problem. This is a problem that does affect thousands of people. And ironically, the policy that is in place right now only allows for a very small group of to have exceptions. So the deal is the way the state has set up their policy, only people who meet a certain combination of criteria can actually allow their workers to work overtime. So some personal attendants will be able to work overtime, time and a half, if they meet certain, if their person with a disability meets certain qualifications. So first you must, for the person with a disability, you must have being alone time marked on your service plan. So there are only some people with disabilities that actually have being alone time marked on their service plan, and that's only 1,100 people. So 1,100 people out of that 27,595, only those 1,100 people will be able to allow overtime for their workers. And of those, they also have to have either a DON score, a determination of need assessment score of 70 or above, or they need to be paying an exceptional care rate to their providers, or they have a court-ordered service plan. So these are pretty strict requirements, and the only way that anybody is going to be allowed to have overtime is if you have an emergency backup provider on record. And there are a lot of people that don't because the state hasn't been enforcing that very well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how the pot of people just gets narrower and narrower and narrower. The question arises, in an emergency, let's say there's a snowstorm. Let's say there's a snowstorm and there's something wrong and Gaylene is not home and she can't get to her daughter. Well, what's going to happen, you know? Or she can't get out and she has to do all these extra things. Well, the problem is that the state is going to require Gaylene to file, like, overtime forms and ask for an exception. And she's going to have to prove that there was some kind of dire emergency that threatened her daughter's health and safety. And so maybe they'll approve it because they said that they will approve it on a case-by-case basis, but we don't have any guarantee. And labor advocates say that also you have to be careful because if somebody works hours, then they need to be paid for those hours. So this question of, like, having to wait to approve hours and then getting paid is a little bit iffy. So I think my point is that there's a big pool of people who are affected by this. Okay? So there's a giant pool of people who participate either as a person with a disability or as a worker in the home services program. And then there's a very, very small pool of people who would be allowed to do overtime and a pretty big pool of people who are going to have a lot of problems. And that's what we're trying to get the word out about.
So, Gaylene, okay, let's...
Before we get too far from that point, could I...
Yeah, I was just going to have you jump in.
All the paperwork that Amber was talking about for the exception, like she said, it's an after the fact when you file that paperwork, and then it's up to them at the central office to either accept or deny. It's been sent out by email and other forms very strictly that if you do that more than twice, or actually only twice, and it's not approved, you will be fired, and you will never be hired by the program to care for anybody.
Yikes.
That is dangerous.
Well, absolutely. So
who is even going to take a chance and try to file one of them, knowing that they could be, you could be fired over it if they're not approved? Two times. That's it.
So you've just got a couple of weeks, really. What, 3 weeks here to actually get everything in place? Is that even possible?
No, it's not going to be for my household. I have a backup PA for emergencies, but it's just that. So basically, my daughter is going to lose hours, and I am going to be continuing to do what I do, but I'm going to do it with a 40% income cut, which is going to put me at risk of losing my home, and she is going to face placement because if I don't have a home, she don't have a home.
Right.
On top of which, my income services and keeps my handicap van going for her. If I can't go get a second job and be here to take care of her. So she's looking at possible placement, which I can tell you she spent 30 days in Estilla last summer, and she hated it. Her choice is at home. So this is it's quite the dilemma for my household.
Right. Oh, yeah. And lots of people out there, 24,000 or so, that are going to be looking at these cuts.
It's gut-wrenching as far as we've come for our disabled people to think that it's going to be crushed and ruined and we're going to be set back 20, 30 years and that so many of these people face being institutionalized.
Seems to be a pattern that's developing, isn't it?
It is.
So where can people go to get more information about this particular issue? Is there something on the Access Living website, and what is that?
Yeah. So right now, I believe there's some information posted on the Access Living website, but if I can send that to you, that would be helpful. But you should go to accessliving.org. But my biggest recommendation is that Access Living runs what is called a home and community ombudsman program. We basically serve Chicago, but we can take calls from outside of Chicago and help refer you to the appropriate resources. But the number for the home and community ombudsman program is 312-640-2152. And I'll repeat that in just a minute. But what they can do is you can call during business hours on a weekday and ask questions about the home services program and what is this policy and how will it affect me. And the ombudsman can direct you to whatever the appropriate resources are that you need. The email address is just ombudsman, O-M-B-U-D-S-M-A-N, ombudsman, at accessliving.org. So you can email them. And again, the number is 312-640-2152. People with disabilities and the home services program can contact their local DOORS offices, their DOORS counselors, to find out what's going on. But if there seems to be confusion at the local office level, I would encourage you to call the central office for DOORS, because central office is where they're making all the big decisions about who qualifies for overtime and who doesn't.
Okay,
and who qualifies for emergency approval and who doesn't.
We are out of time. Thank you, Amber. Amber Smock okay. of Access Living and Gaylene Roberts, mom. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Vicki.
This okay, and other you. Episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.